Hi, everyone. Welcome to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland, where there is more activity taking place as we get closer to spring training. Our show's here, dwindling down to a precious few as we'll be heading out to Goodyear in a couple of weeks to get ready for the exhibition slate. Our first broadcast now, less than a month away, we'll broadcast the exhibition opener. Tom Hamilton will have that first pitch on March the 3rd when the Indians take on the Cincinnati Reds in the exhibition opener at Goodyear Ballpark. Should be a lot of fun. And when the trucks leave, as they did on Friday, that's a sure sign that spring training not too far off. We'll hear from the Indians clubhouse manager, Tony Amato. He'll fill us in on the ins and outs of truck day. We will also hear from Tribe manager Terry Francona as he prepares for his third season as Indians manager, with the expected optimism that you would hear from most anyone associated with any team in Major League Baseball at this time of the year. We'll visit with Anthony Gallus, a young prospect in the Indians minor league system. Great story, non-drafted free agent from right here in Northeast Ohio. And we'll tell you his story, or he'll tell you his story, as a part of our show today. And we'll also continue our American League Central Division previews with a preview of the defending Central Division champion Detroit Tigers with their radio voice Dan Dickerson. So a lot to get to this week on Tribe Talk. You stay with us. Tribe Talk gets rolling after this timeout on the Cleveland Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland. And how about this? In our off-season hot stove shows, only two more times we'll be able to say that. Then we will bring you this show from Goodyear, Arizona, and Indian spring training. The trucks left on Friday with full loads of equipment and everything that the players and coaches will need during the course of spring training. We will hear from Indians Executive Vice President of Clubhouse Operations, Tony Amato, a little bit later on in the program about the truck day on Friday. But first, we check in with Tribe Manager Terry Francona. We had a chance to catch up with Tito during Tribe Fest activities a couple of weeks back, and always great to check in with him to get that feel for what's going on with the ball club at different points in time during the season or during the off season. And for Terry Francona, beginning his third year as the manager of the Indians, perhaps the most important and most noteworthy number next to his name during his time with the Tribe, there have only been two games that the Indians have played in his two seasons where they were mathematically eliminated from a playoff spot. Those were the final two games a season ago. So some great work done by the Tribe manager. Always the off seasons can go quickly. There's time needed for recovery. But he was saying that this year he bounced back a little bit quicker from the season from a physical standpoint and is raring to go as we get closer to spring training.
You know, Rosie, I mean, I tried real hard to take better care of myself, which I'm not the best at. I think I'm learning. There's so many good people here that really try hard to kind of lean on me to take care of myself. I think that helped. You know, I lost a little bit of weight, which is hard for me to do during the year. And then in the winter, I'm always real good and to get revved up again. But this year, I bounced back quicker, and I think part of it was, and just to be kind of blunt about it, I like our team. There's a lot of times as a manager, you go through a season and, you know, I mean, you're dying for your guys to win, but you're also with them every day, and sometimes it gets a little aggravating. And I like our guys. They know it too. That doesn't mean, you know, we don't get disappointed or we don't have challenges, but they're a fun group to be a part of. I know they make me feel younger and wanting to be a part of it. Even when we struggle, I never get the feeling like, man, they're not trying. You know, I see, you know, seeing what Brantley's turned into and Kluber and Cody Allen, and our young players are becoming the core of this team, and that's exciting.
And I know you've taken great lengths to mention it when everyone talks about what the rest of baseball, particularly the division, has done in the offseason. There's been a lot going on, not necessarily with the Indians, but you like the fact that there's an unusual amount of players back this year. And how can that come into play over the course of the season, teamwork and baseball and familiarity?
Well, you know what? I think a couple things. One is, regardless of the turnover you have, every year's a new year. And you work so hard in spring training to try to get that feeling of camaraderie and unity and loyalty and have a team form their personality, because it's a little bit different every year, and you never quite know what's going to help you get to that, but so you work at it every day. I also think being together now, this will be our third year, and it can go one of two ways. One, you can relax, and because everybody knows what's expected, or you can take the idea of the familiarity and work harder. And I think our players are all buying into the fact that, okay, we know each other, now let's take it a step further, which really makes us as a coaching staff feel good, because we want to get out there and get dirty and watch these guys get better.
And when you look at how the Indians do it, a lot of homegrown talent or players who have been acquired while they're in the minor leagues and then coming through. You had a chance to meet with a lot of the minor league staff during your time here during Tribe Fest. How important is that to get everybody on the same page, top to bottom?
You know, Rosie, that was a first, and I think it was a great idea. You know, usually the pitching guys, they have their little seminars or whatever, and the hitting guys, and the managers really never do, any place I've ever been. And they're the leaders of the organization. So for us to be able to get together for 2 days with the guys from player development, managers from rookie league all the way to the major leagues, I think is a great way, you know, to exchange ideas, talk about things that challenge us, talk about ways you talk to players. I thought it was really an enlightening 2 days.
Terry Francona joining us. And when you get to spring training, I know each year there's probably different things that you may focus on. There's the things that you have to every year. But defense, you mentioned at the end of the season, the concern. What do you do in spring training to try and get it going in a different direction?
Well, I mean, last year, we shot ourselves in the foot a lot of times. And it doesn't mean you can't win, but it certainly makes it harder. And, you know, you can try to quantify your earned runs, unearned runs, but then it's hard to quantify how much harder you make your pitcher work. You know, do you cost them an inning of a game because of a play you don't make? Things like that. Just know that if you make plays and you finish plays and you don't give extra outs, it's a heck of a lot easier to win. So saying that, we have to get better. And I think, you know, we don't ever want to reinvent the wheel, because that's never our goal. In baseball, playing good baseball is good baseball. I think we'll probably practice a lot more in our shift because we play in it so much. I also think we'll do drills. When we do drills, we'll do them to completion. And that way, whether it morphs into a rundown or we're going to get the out wherever it's designated instead of stopping the play. And the hope is that if we do that live enough, when the season starts, game won't be going faster.
All right, a couple of key players. You have your Cy Young Award winner back. That's always nice. And I think sometimes people wonder, well, how could he possibly be better in the next season? But could you make a case that Corey Kluber, while not scratching the surface, still has some room to grow?
Yes. I think anytime you have a guy that has 2+ years of service, you know, he's learning himself, he's understanding himself, the league, and he's doing a great job of it. And you may not see, you know, every year you may not see a guy's record get better and better. That's probably impossible. But there's things he's going to learn because he's a hard worker, he's intelligent, and he wants to be better. You know, whether it's improving his changeup or holding runners or just understanding how the league wants to attack him will certainly be a huge advantage to him moving forward.
And the rest of the rotation seems to be a strength. Is that an area you're pretty confident in with what you have at least going into spring training?
You know, Rosie, I hope so, because I know that if it's not, that makes for a long year. I know we seem to have acquired depth. We have some youth. I think we are going to be able to – you have to have, you know, basically, what, 2,000 or 1,000 innings out of your rotation. So whether you get it out of 5, 6, 7, or 8 guys, you got to get it. And I think Chris has done a really good job of, you know, with the addition of TJ, and we have Zach and Tomlin. And so we have guys that are fighting for a spot. Also, we have some fallback plans because you know you're going to need more than 5 starters.
On the other side, Michael Brantley obviously leads your lineup. What did you see from him last year that allowed him to make that big step? And what gives you confidence that it just keeps building with him?
You know, it seems so effortlessly, and it's not, because I know it's, but he makes it look that way just because of the way he plays. I really think it was a case of a guy getting a little bit stronger base, and that's just through maturity and hard work. And then all of a sudden the ball's east, maybe hitting the gap. All of a sudden they're carrying a little farther. You know, he's hitting the ball off the wall or out of the ballpark. He uses the whole field. He puts the bat on the ball, so he gets rewarded for, you know, hits that because he uses the whole field. He doesn't strike out. And he's so professional. You know, he runs bases. I think he was 22 of 23 stolen bases. He never makes an error in left field. played 40 games in center field. I mean, there's so many things he does that he went from the first year where he was such a valuable guy in our lineup because we moved him around to last year getting to the point where he hit third and didn't move because he was kind of that rock in that lineup and we'd figure out somebody else to move.
Thanks, Tito.
Thanks, Rosie.
That's Indians manager Terry Francona talking about the season to come and the excitement and enthusiasm that he has for this year's ball club as we get closer to spring training. When we come back, we will visit with one of the Indians' young prospects who was in town recently for the Winter Development Program. He was in town a bunch as a youngster, grew up in Strongsville, played his college ball at Kent State. We're talking about Anthony Gallis, who has really made a name for himself in the Indians' farm system and continues to climb that minor league ladder. We'll get his thoughts on his career and what lies ahead when we return after this timeout on the Cleveland Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. We rejoin you from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend. Great to have you with us. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do so. At Indians Radio is our Twitter address. Well, the Indians recently held their winter development program for some of the young prospects in the farm system. Also, some players new to the system, not necessarily younger players, but perhaps acquired via trade or free agency, something like that along those lines. A player who was at Progressive Field in a playing capacity for not the first time, but certainly a thrill for him, for someone who grew up in Strongsville and played his college ball at Kent State. Outfielder Anthony Gallis, who has really battled to make a name for himself after being signed as a non-drafted free agent, the absolute toughest way to make it to the major leagues is without being drafted if you're a United States citizen. And for Anthony Gallis, it's been several steps on that minor league ladder, and he's been knocking on the door. And last year, splitting time between single-A Carolina and double-A Akron, Gallis finished the season with 24 home runs, and he drove in 80. Solid numbers across the board. That's after the year prior where the power numbers were up as well. So a big, strong outfielder and someone who is looking forward to making an impression in this year's spring training. We caught up with him at the Winter Development Program and asked him what it meant to him as a lifelong Tribe fan to be a part of the Winter Development Program as he rises through the farm system.
Being part of the Winter Development Program means a lot to me because, you know, it kind of means I've made some ground, you know, in the organization. You know, I've made some headway and I'm getting closer to that ultimate goal of, you know, playing for the Cleveland Indians here at Progressive Park. You know, I knew it as Jacobs Field back in the day, but, you know, I have this vision in my head, like, you know, that I'm standing in the outfield and I'm looking in and I'm looking around and it's a playoff game and, you know, the crowd's going crazy like how I knew it back when I was a kid. You know, I went to, you know, a couple of those playoff games in the 90s, and you know, it's good to be back home here, and you know, I'm excited for this opportunity to gain skills mentally and really just, you know, taking it as a one more step towards the ultimate goal.
And you're trying to make it to the major leagues as a non-drafted free agent, the toughest possible way to do it, but at this stage of your career, does that even come into play anymore, or is it still a factor that drives you a little bit?
You know, when I first came into pro ball, it definitely, like, it not only did it bothered me a little bit, but I always kind of felt like it was like me against the world and the system of, you know, the draft, and, you know, it kind of like it made me play a little bit out of characteristic of myself because I felt like I had to prove something to everyone. When really, you know, you play this game and you know, you work hard every day and you take steps every day to get better, and that's really what this whole process is about, you know, is enjoying that, the day to day. And, you know, we have this gift of, you know, being able to play baseball for a career, and, you know, to give anything less is to sacrifice that gift. You know, and now in my career, I don't even worry about not getting drafted. You know, I'm to this point, you know, the average average time to play is 2 years, and then, you know, you either get released or guys retire, and I made it, you know, this is going to be my fifth season. Actually, fourth full season, because I missed all of 2013 with an injury, but, you know, I made it this far. So getting drafted has nothing to do with where I'm at now. You know, I'm mentally, I'm a different player. Physically, I'm a different player, and it doesn't have any bearing on how I play the game now.
You mentioned mentally and physically. Good college career at Kent State, a solid program. But what's been different in pro ball that you've had to adjust to make the progress that you've had?
You know, I think it's definitely carrying myself on and off the field. In college, you know, I just played because it was fun and I was good at it. You know, and not until my last season, when there were thoughts of not getting drafted, did I really kick in like, oh man, I got to start taking this more serious. You know, I had so much success early in my career and it was easy that I didn't understand what it took every day, you know, coming to the cage early, you know, getting extra work in the outfield. And now being in pro ball, you know, I get more joy out of everything that goes into the game, and that's what's fun. You know, people say, you know, hey, come on, let's go out or let's do this, and I don't want to do any of those things. You know, the best thing is being able to come to the ballpark every day and play, and, you know, so keeping yourself healthy, you know, going about your business the correct way, working out, playing catch when you have to, just all those things. I could go on and on, but, you know, it's not that I didn't work hard. It's just I'm more focused now than I was back in college. Like, I have a sense of purpose of, this is my goal, this is how I'm going to get there, and these are the steps I'm going to take every single day to get there.
When it was the Indians that became the team that would sign you as a free agent, what was going through your mind based on everything you've already mentioned about the Indians being your team growing up, having grown up in the neighborhood?
You know, it made it that much more special because, you know, if you lived in Cleveland in the 90s, I mean, that was it. Like, the Browns were gone, and, you know, the Cavs were, you didn't even really know what they were doing because they weren't that good then. But, Jacobs Field was rocking at that time, and, you know, those are all the memories I have of the Indians as a kid. So, you know, when they called, it was like, you know, it was great. I mean, I wanted to get called by a team, and the fact that it was them just made it even better.
That's Anthony Gallus, a name to keep an eye on this season. I'm sure a lot of folks who saw him play in high school or college are already doing that as he's made his way to the upper echelons of the Indians minor league ladder. It'll be interesting to see where he begins this season. You would think he'd get a good shot at making that Columbus ball club, but we'll see what happens in terms of numbers and the better opportunity maybe elsewhere for him. But he knows that he needs to make that quick impression at the age of 27, trying to stay in it and make his way toward the major leagues. It would be quite a story if he does indeed make it to Cleveland. Stay with us. When we come back, we'll continue our American League Central Division previews. The defending division champion Detroit Tigers. We'll talk with Dan Dickerson, Tigers radio voice, next as we continue on Tribe Talk on the Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus with you from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland. Great to have you with us this weekend as we continue our hot stove shows. Not many left from the ballpark, as when we get down toward the end of February, we'll be joining you from Goodyear, Arizona, and Indian spring training. Well, we started our look around the American League Central Division on last week's show with Royals broadcaster Ryan Lefevre. Of course, Kansas City, the big surprise in the playoffs after reaching the playoffs for the first time since 1985. They took it to a Game 7 of the World Series. The division champ last year was actually not Kansas City. It was the Tigers again with 89 wins. And once again, until someone dethrones Detroit, they will be the favorites heading into the season. Now, we caught up with Dan Dickerson, their radio voice, earlier this week. before the news came out that Victor Martinez sustained a knee injury that required surgery and is expected to keep him out until opening day. We'll see if he's ready for the opener or not, but certainly a setback for Martinez is coming off that great year. And it's been an offseason of change for the Motor City Tigers as they've had several of their key players leave, but they've also made some nice acquisitions as they usually do. And Dan was saying that those changes in the offseason, they may be troubling to some, but the Tigers are still the defending champs for a reason.
I think Dave Dombrowski put it well at the the Fan Fest last weekend that there's some uncertainty about the team because there are more unknowns than most here. Not unknown necessarily to Dave and his staff, but fans don't know a whole lot about Anthony Gose or Joannis Cespedes or Alfredo Simon or Shane Green. These are kind of unknowns to fans, so they're not maybe quite sure what the Tigers have. The injury situation with Rondon, Iglesias, and Miguel Cabrera, are these guys going to be ready? So these are all, some of the things that Dave talked about. I think it's been a very interesting offseason. I like the addition of Shane Green a lot. Alfredo Simon's a perfectly solid back end of the rotation guy. He's got a power arm. And I think people wonder, well, how do you replace Max Scherzer? To me, I mean, when he rejected the Tigers' offer before the season started last year, the Tigers probably felt he wasn't coming back. So they went out and got David Price. David Price isn't in Detroit if the Tigers had signed Max Scherzer long-term. So to me, that's how you replace Max Scherzer with David Price. David Price and Ebal Sanchez made a combined 33 starts for the Tigers last year because of Sanchez's injury. Well, this year, you would hope that number is closer to 63 or 65. So that's how I look at it. The strength of rotation is still Verlander, Price, Sanchez, and I think Shane Green's got a chance to be a really good pitcher. I'm a little biased because he shut the Tigers down twice in two starts for the Yankees last year, and I mean shut them down in 15 innings. But I think that's a really good addition. So it's been a lot of change. I do think that the three keys are the guys coming back from injury and Justin Verlander coming back from an off year.
And when you look at injuries, some talk about Miguel Cabrera. How healthy is he heading into spring training?
And that's a great question. The good news was they found out he had fractures in his ankle. I don't know how he was dealing with something probably all year. The core muscle surgery repair in the offseason last year, I think, cost him. His legs weren't really underneath him in the first half of the year, and then clearly he was dealing with some kind of an ankle injury, and they didn't find out until after the season that he had a fracture in there. So they repaired that, screws in the ankle, and the walking boot is now off ahead of time, ahead of schedule. I think there's a pretty good chance he might not be ready for the start of the year, but all indications are, especially once he gets clearance for going full bore in his workouts, full weight bearing on that ankle, that even if it's not opening day, it's within a couple of weeks of opening day that he's ready. So it doesn't appear to be at this moment concern, and that obviously is huge. The last 2 years he's been bothered by an injury down the stretch. It cost the Tigers big time, and I think if it's a few weeks delayed, a 100% healthy Miguel Cabrera for 5.5 months is you just can't overstate the impact on this lineup with a healthy Miguel Cabrera in it.
And another name that you mentioned earlier, Joannis Cespedes, added to that lineup. Arguably the best lineup that he'll be a part of in his major league career, but certainly star power with Cabrera and some others. Victor Martinez, certainly. When you add him in there, it would seem that the potential is there for this team to score a lot of runs again.
Yeah, they were first in batting average on base, second in run scoring, and I think it's still top three offense. It really is amazing. I'm not sure with all the advances in statistical analysis that you can truly measure the impact of a great hitter in a lineup, but I really do believe there is a ripple effect throughout the lineup when you have a great hitter in it. And if you add in Victor Martinez, he had a simply superb, he had a great season last year. It does impact guys around him. I mean, J.D. Martinez had a great year last year. He made changes in his swing. A lot of the credit's due to him. But I don't think there's any question that having Miguel Cabrera, Victor Martinez ahead of him helps. And I think it benefits Cespedes. Just watching these guys go about their daily work, you can pick things up that can help your swing and your approach. And the end result, I think, and I think we saw that with a couple of Tigers last year, and I think Cespedes can benefit from it this year. He's already a good hitter, but I think he's better.
Tiger radio voice Dan Dickerson joining us, talking Tigers here, another American League Central Division opponent preview today on Tribe Talk. And Dan, we've talked offense, we've talked starting pitching, bullpen, an issue for the Tigers a year ago. How do you see it heading into spring training in terms of who's closing, and is there more depth there this year heading into the spring?
I think that's a key word, depth, because it didn't make any bold moves to bolster the bullpen this winter, and I don't really blame the Tigers for not making any bold moves because the price got pretty high for, for the key guys around the market. And they've already got $17 million tied up in Nathan and Soria. You know, Joe Nathan's going to close. I think the difference this year is there are more options if he struggles. And he struggled last year. You know, he was a little better down the stretch, but it was still 13 walks, 10 strikeouts for Joe Nathan the last 2 months of the season as the DRA got better. Well, he felt better. I think the results were somewhat better. But he definitely has to be better than what we saw last year. He has to have more swings and misses, more easier innings. And this year, I think if he struggles, you've got it, Joaquin Soria. Well, I know struggled with the Tigers, but I think this guy's terrific. He's still young, track record solid. He had an oblique injury that bothered him last year. That's a guy I think you can put right in that closer's role if you had to. Bruce Rondon, they're counting on, but he's coming back from Tommy John, so to me, that's a wait and see. Great to have that arm back, obviously. 100-mile-an-hour fastball. Power arm, be a huge addition to the back end of the bullpen. But Tommy John last March, so I'm still a little, I'm kind of a wait and see. And I mean, the Tigers, they're realistic, but all the reports are good on Bruce Rondon. But I think it's the depth. They have more arms and more possibilities, I think, Jim, this year than they did a year ago. They had seven guys last year, and when one of those guys had to be replaced or they had to move a guy up to the minor league, performance or injury, there just wasn't the depth to add to the bullpen. This year, you got some minor league starters to be converted into relievers like a Buck Farmer, a hard thrower. And I think we've seen in baseball that some of the best relievers come from guys who used to be starters. He's intriguing. But you got a Josh Side, power arm, missed last year because of problems with his feet, not his arm. Joel Hanrahan, 2 years removed from Tommy John surgery. You've got several minor leaguers who can step in. So in terms of who jumps out at you beyond the top three, probably not many, but you really do have some possibilities. Ian Cole's another in 23, very inconsistent results last year from the left side, but he throws mid-90s when all is well, and he admits that he let his conditioning go. That's a guy who still has upside. So to me, yes, question marks, but at least I think more depth, more power arms to choose from. And I do think, overall, it's going to be a much better bullpen than we saw last year.
Well, certainly the games between the Indians and Tigers these past couple of seasons have been hotly contested, and it won't be long into the schedule before it gets started this year, as the Tigers are the home opening opponent for the Indians. Dan Dickerson, as always, thanks so much for the preview, and we'll catch up with you soon, I'm sure.
I'm always looking forward to seeing the Indians early in the year, especially. I think it's going to be a heck of a race. But I think the Indians right now and Tigers are right at the top of the division. I think it's going to be a fun year.
That's Dan Dickerson, radio voice for the Detroit Tigers, the defending American League Central Division champions. And until someone knocks them off, I know a lot of teams have made great improvements within the division. Again, they have to be considered the favorites. Stay with us. When we come back, we visit with Tony Amato on Truck Day, the truck leaving Friday. We should say trucks, plural, two trucks headed to Goodyear, Arizona from Cleveland with everything you can imagine to get players, coaches, and whoever through those 6 weeks or so of spring training. We'll visit with Tony next on the Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus back with you from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland. Our final segment on this week's show, and Progressive Field on Friday, the site of the annual Truck Day, and in this case, two big 18-wheelers getting ready to head out to Goodyear, Arizona with just about every piece of equipment that you could think of that players and coaches might need for the expanse of spring training out in Goodyear. Tony Amato is the Indians' Executive Vice President of Clubhouse Operations. He oversees a staff of thousands that was putting together the pallets to get on the trucks in an organized fashion, and really in a press conference that rivaled a presidential-type press conference. He met with the Cleveland media to discuss the ins and outs of the trucks leaving for Goodyear.
This is our annual loading the trucks to go to Goodyear. We have two 53-footers here that are going to be transporting all the baseball equipment down for the start of spring training. And I know it's a big day for Cleveland fans to have, you know, a sign of spring coming with the weather and everything. I think it's great for everybody here. I don't know the total weight. I know that we had over 50-some skids on this, which is probably a record. It seems like we're really heavy going down this year for some reason. A lot of personal stuff, big on bikes, and then all the baseball equipment. I think we're pretty fortunate with our facility in Goodyear that a lot of stuff can be shipped right there for the players' needs. We have somebody there year-round, where in the past at other facilities we didn't have that. So it helps us with a lot of logistics. But there's still stuff. We've been putting together the players' uniform sets so everything goes right in their lockers when they get there. So we have all that stuff shipped right here to Cleveland. They've been working on that. My staff has been unbelievable for the past month doing all that.
So how long is the process building up to this day?
The guys really started. I mean, we did our ordering. Our ordering was done in October, November. And then the stuff came in after the first of the year. And with the way the baseball calendar sets up this year, we actually had an extra week to do it because we're a little later this year. So that benefited us as well. So it's been about a 5-week process.
It seems like it's a well-oiled machine. You know, we've been covering this a couple years now. I mean, your guys seem to just know exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, they're good. I wish I was as well-oiled as some of the other people doing it up there. But it's a drill, and they know it. They've been staging stuff, you know, logistically. Everybody knows what their role is and gets it done.
How long does it take to get here?
They are going to leave today. They're going to pull out of here when this is loaded. We hope to get this done by noon, and they're scheduled to arrive into Goodyear either Tuesday night or Wednesday morning. We're going to unload on Wednesday morning out in Goodyear, and we'll have the locker room functional by Wednesday, late Wednesday afternoon. Yeah, it's big. It gets the brand out there. It's great for both Andrews and the Indians.
What are some of the more unusual things you're shipping this year?
I didn't really see anything unusual. It's, like I said, a lot of bikes. I always say the weirdest thing I've ever shipped was a safe for somebody one time, which was a little bizarre. But there's not anything unique that stands out in my mind this year.
Any idea how many sets of golf clubs?
Quite a few. The front office brought a lot this year, and then the players had stuff that they left here that we're shipping out there, and then, of course, my staff and everybody else. So everyone's going to have a little bit of free time, but not much. Once the front office gets out there, they hit the ground running, and our staff, so if they can get out there. I would say there's probably 25 sets on there.
Maybe how much water, how much mustard?
There was one skid of mustard, and I believe there are 12 pallets of water going down there. We have to split evenly just because of the weight.
Why do you send water? I mean, I would think...
Because we have a deal with Pepsi Aquafina, so we take that down with us and use it throughout the complex down there. It's easier to get it and bring it down with us than to get it shipped out there.
Thank you. Compare this, taking these trucks to Goodyear
I just think the big difference is, I mean, obviously the distance, but the second difference was, you know, not knocking Goodyear or not knocking Winter Haven at all. It was when we walked in there, it was uninhabited for since we had left the year before, so we were searching for everything, microwaves, whatever, and now we get down there and it's functional. We have players down there working out right now, and Fletch does a great job getting them ready until we get down there and taking care of it, and it's a huge difference to have our own facility year round.
You don't have to take as much stuff, right?
No, we leave a lot of stuff down there. We do leave a lot of stuff down there. When we left Winter Haven, we had to bring everything with us back.
In terms of like baseballs and bats, I mean, a lot of that's already there.
Baseballs got delivered yesterday, so they are there. We got some of the bats shipped here, so we like to mark them and label them for each individual player, and then the rest will be shipped to Goodyear.
And how many of
each? Each player gets between 18 and 24 bats. So I don't know how many position players we have, roughly 30. Baseballs, we have over 1,500 dozen. And hopefully that'll last us through camp. Sometimes we have to fill in, it depends. You know, Terry runs a great camp, and Millsy, and it's organized, and we get on a lot of fields, get the players working. So we go through a little bit more baseballs than we have in the past, but that's the trade-off.
That's Tony Amato, Indians Executive Vice President of Clubhouse Operations for the Cleveland Indians. The trucks are on their way. They are somewhere in the breadbasket of America making their way to Goodyear, Arizona. They should be arriving sometime early next week with everything that the Indians will need to be prepared for the season. And that's going to do it for our show this week. We're glad you could join us. Hope you can join us next week as we will have another edition of Tribe Talk coming your way. Until then, this is Jim Rosenhaus reminding you that you've been listening to Tribe Talk on the Cleveland Indians Radio Network.
Indian fever, be a believer with the Cleveland Indians. Indian fever, it starts from the very first inning. Indian fever, each game is a brand new beginning. It's the hits, the homers, the double plays. It's how you feel when we win. So catch Indian fever.
Be a believer
with the Cleveland Indians.